Welcome to part two of our conversation with Don and Lainey of Spectra Waves about the haunted McPike Mansion. Well, let me ask you this. Why do you think it is that that the owner, Sharon, allows for investigations in her home? Quite often when you hear of someone investigating a location, it's especially if someone lives there, it's because they're trying to eradicate something or they're trying to get an answer. She clearly understands, believes, is at peace, is drawn to all of the above, what is going on in her house. Is there a goal that she has in mind when she has investigators come in? Is there a question she's trying to get answered, or is she just trying to share what she's found, trying to share this piece of interest that with like-minded individuals?
And I think that's the latter. And I think the fact that she really embraces mm-hmm. these spirits, almost akin to the fact of like a child, like you would show off your son or daughter if they knew how to dance really well, or if they could sing, right? At family functions, you would bring them out and you would encourage them to show off the talent because you're proud of them.
Sure.
And I think I get that kind of from what Sharon really talks about and how she talks about it. You know, now I will say this, is that Sharon doesn't physically live in the home. She actually lives across the street from the home.
Okay.
Even though she owns the building.
Sure.
She, through the course of time, they're trying to re-renovate the building. And one of her impetuses behind having people come out is the money that she charges for larger investigator groups to come and hold an investigation there. Or functions mm-hmm. that she has throughout the course of the year, she utilizes any money to actually continue to allow the mansion to be refurbished and to be updated, so that that, you know, as her homage, I think, to the spirits.
That's interesting, and that's what we see so often now. Who would have thought that someone would find a way? It's not a money making proposition. It's a proposition of being able to keep these buildings in existence and allow them to be restored and allow them to live on by looking into the past and who may still be residing there. I like that. Let me ask you about your story a bit and how you got involved with paranormal investigations. And before we get up to where you have a paranormal group, Spectra Waves and things of that nature, take me back further than that. What is your, I guess, origin story, if you will? Where was it for you that that you first developed an interest in the paranormal? For many of us, it was childhood. There was an event, or it was just an atmosphere that we grew up around. What was it for you?
Well, is that going all the way back? My family, part of my family, was from Illinois and America, the United States, and had been here since the mid 1800s. That was on my father's side. On my mother's side, however, they had just come over during World War II from Poland. And so superstition was part and parcel of growing up. You know, there was always a welcoming thing about the fact that about ghosts, about spirits, about relatives that watch over you, right? It was kind of a common thing. It wasn't frowned upon. It wasn't looked down upon. It was basically normal. I hadn't really encountered anything when I was younger, outside of the fact that things they would allude, you know, especially family members, they would allude to, oh, that must be your grandmother. You know, that noise that happened in the hallway, or, you know, or I thought, you know, the phone rang and somebody picked it up and nobody was on the other end of the phone, but I think that was your grandfather calling, you know. So it was that kind of mentoring that kept me interested, that I thought, wow, you know, how do they know this, right? So it was just an interest. It wasn't born out of anything that was strange or unusual that really occurred to me in my childhood. Now I know I had met Lainey in 2006, and Lainey had a story, though, when she was younger. So, Lainey?
My goodness, there goes back so far. Talk about the superstition. My grandma, I was really fascinated by my parents' story, but it goes back to my grandma. They were about to leave. They were taking the neighbors, and they were sitting at the dinner table, and they were going for a ride. I think they were going shopping, and all of a sudden, the Last Supper, the picture that was hanging up, fell down. It just fell. And they looked at each other. They're like, wow, that's weird. So anyway, they go ahead and they go in the car, and they are at a railroad track. Somehow when the gate went down, it connected the car and took the car and just swung it. Two of the neighbors died. My grandma, she was pretty much almost dead, but they had to reconstruct her face. So she did live, and I think one other person lived. That story really stuck with me. My mom, growing up, she always had so many stories. She would tell me about how she would play hide and seek with ghosts. They lived in a haunted house, and she thought my uncle was upstairs. So she'd say, okay, I'm going to hide, you know, find me. And she'd wait and wait, and she'd see actually someone walk. And all of a sudden, she hears someone downstairs ring the doorbell. And she's like, well, I thought you were upstairs. And he's like, no, I was down here the whole time. She's like, well, who was I playing hide and seek with? So that was also another fascinating story that she would tell me. Another story, real quick, that I want to say is my uncle, my great uncle, he had cancer and he passed away. The day of his funeral, we had a phone that wasn't connected at all. It was just laying there. It was dead. And this was probably back in I would say maybe 1999. So it wasn't a cell phone. It was a landline phone. And that phone just started ringing three times. We all looked at each other and no one picked up the phone. We were all pretty scared. And we thought maybe it was Uncle Mike. So, again, it just made me more curious about the paranormal. Well, back to when I was first born, death kind of like followed me. I was actually wrapped, the umbilical cord was wrapped around my neck twice. So, of course, there was no oxygen. So I was pretty much dead when I was born. So I wasn't crying. They had to revive me. Luckily, I'm here today. So again, I've always been somewhat very sensitive, very into the paranormal, just trying to figure out what it is. Why? What is the other side? Is it a different dimension? Is it a parallel universe?
And so, you know, and then fast forward to even prior to me meeting Lainey, because the paranormal kind of intrigued me so much, the idea of the unknown and trying to find out what you could garnish and what you could prove, you know, for your own self-worth, not really sharing it to anybody. Back in the 80s, and I'm dating myself, is that 1982, some friends from school and myself put together a map of local legends in the Chicagoland area. And we went to go sell that map for Halloween of 82. Believe it or not, and a lot of people don't know this who weren't involved in it, really. I mean, there were no shows outside of In Search Of that really garnished anybody's interest in things that were unknown or paranormal. It wasn't really a big thing on TV for a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. They had a what is today is referred to as a Paracon. But back then, they called it a ghost expo. And they actually had some paranormal investigators talk about findings that they had in throughout the local area. And so we attended that that ghost expo to sell our maps, just like you do today for a Paracon, where you would set up a table and sell books or whatever. Is that and then that really piqued my interest. I thought that was, you know, that there was, I realized at that time that there was other people who took this serious to the point where they tried to scientifically prove encounters that people had experienced. And so that kind of resided with me. And then, you know, like a lot of things, unfortunately, life gets in the way. And so, you know, you go to work, you kind of put that on the back burner. And if you happen to see something interesting, you know, on TV, or you read a news article that talks about, you know, people's encounters, I kind of kept up with that. So interestingly, in 2006, I met up with Lainey and we started to share stories. It just so happened to be October of 2006. So, you know, hence Halloween, right? So you have the opportunity to talk about, you know, to reflect back on certain encounters that you've heard of or that you've experienced. And so we both realized at the time that we both were interested in the paranormal. So and at that time, they had just started releasing things like Ghost Hunters on TV. So, you know, I can't say that I was a fan, but I was fascinated with what they did and how they conducted their investigations. So in around 2013, I had read an article online that talked about how that they were faking evidence on these shows, that it was a reality show and they had to get results. So, well, you know, one of the people that had written this article had talked about the fact that they were a producer on the show and that you know, they were the ones that were doing the knocks on the wall and moving objects and whatnot. And so I talked to Lainey about this and I said, you know what? I said, this really, really intrigues me now, just based on everything that I've heard of, not really that I've encountered, you know. And Lainey had, you know, again, reiterated her story about the phone. And I said, why don't we do this? Why don't we go buy a couple pieces of equipment and just what they had on the show, an EMF detector, a spirit box, and why don't we go find a couple of historical locations and try to conduct our own investigation and just see if we get anything. And ironically, we did get stuff. We actually had an intelligent response on the spirit box when we asked for a name. We got the name of Thomas, his dad, and that really set us off on a whole different path about the fact that we really invested money and time in researching and understanding how the equipment purportedly picks up entities, what people's theories are on parallel universes, what people's theories are on residual encounters, on intelligent encounters. Did a vast array of research. And then unfortunately, what had happened right after we had started doing this is that we had a slight tragedy. And that tragedy was Lainey had gotten sick. And I'll defer to Lainey to explain that.
I was actually given a death sentence. I was diagnosed with AML, APL, M3 subtype leukemia. One day I was cooking dinner and all of a sudden, the next thing I know, Don said, I'm in a grand mal seizure. So ambulance came, they said, listen, we're going to take you to the hospital, you know, and okay. So I'm in the hospital and doctor walks in and she's like, I got to tell you something. You're like a day away from death right now. And I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, you're pretty much going to die within like the next 24 hours. We have to rush you to Loyola and see what we can do. So as fast as they were giving me blood transfusions, blood was just pouring out of me. Plasma, they were trying to clot the blood. It wasn't working. So I was right there reaching the death plane. I don't think I can be any more closer, huh?
No, right. And so, you know, so they even brought in a priest for last rites for Lainey. And so I thought, you know, and I tried to go there every day, and I did go there every day after work. And her spirits, she kept her spirits up through the whole entire encounter, where most people would have given up based on a lot of the information that they had said. They had started an experimental treatment that they hadn't really done in the United States. It was still under clinical trial. And so they treated her leukemia prognosis, because it was a rare form, prior to about 2010, was 98% death from this leukemia. Wow. There was no chemotherapy, traditional chemotherapy didn't really help. And So what they gave her was arsenic and Atra. And Atra is a toxic form of vitamin A, and arsenic is poison. Mm-hmm. And what they found out was that this research had been done in, ironically, Iran. A doctor had found out that this works to kill the leukemic cells and allows good cells to replenish the body. So she was in the hospital for 3 months. And then a year after that of every day going to get this treatment is that fortunately she's been in remission. She just hit the 5-year mark last year. Mm-hmm. And what they believe is just based on a lot of the clinical trials is that 98% mortality rate went to 98% remission.
Wow.
So it's one of the unsung things that a lot of people don't hear about. But where this makes it relevant to our story is the fact that prior we would go and we would investigate. And I would just make suggestions and be like, hey, why don't we go up to the third floor, or why don't we go in the back room and conduct a session? But it was all arbitrary. There wasn't anything that was really calling me to go back there. It was just, you know, we were just picking spots, and we were new to investigating. So we were just picking spots and conducting things, and we would garnish some evidence, nothing overwhelming, and no encounters that were really, you know, blew us away while we were doing it. And then, so after Lainey, the trooper that she is, she got out of the hospital, and we started investigating again. She really, really wanted to go and investigate again. Mm-hmm. So we did. And one strange thing to me that happened was Lainey would, before she would just go along with me saying, let's go over here, let's go over there. And then Lainey started to take charge of the investigations. And she would say, let's go in the back room, or I really, really want to go upstairs, and I really want to go to this one bedroom, or I really want. And, you know, at first I was, you know, I was reluctant. I was like, I don't know, you know, they didn't really say anything was going on up there. And, you know, she's like, no, we need to go up there. And we would garnish a lot of evidence. No matter what she picked, we would get things, you know. And then, of course, if I said something and was like, hey, you know, why don't we go in the back of the theater and go up in a projectionist booth, nothing would happen. And so I asked her, you know, we started to talk about it in depth. And I said, are you getting sensitive? Are you feeling things when we're on these locations?
And it's just like something kind of calls to me. I don't know what it is, but it just calls to me. And I'm like, let's go up there. Or let's go in the bedroom. And for some reason, now I'm getting even closer to knowing how the person might have passed away. And I don't know how I know that. Mm-hmm. We were at a location on an investigation.
At the Fowler Theater.
At the Fowler Theater. And somehow I knew the guy hung himself. And that was not public record. The owner, or Dwight, he's one of the volunteers, not the owner. When I mentioned that to him, I said, did someone hang himself behind on stage? And he's like, yes. How did you know that? Nobody knows that. So being so sensitive, it's quite fascinating to see what I can find. Mm-hmm. And using the equipment to corroborate my what I'm getting drawn to.
And so we think that's it, you know, and so the story that she talks about with Fowler, with the Fowler Theater is really hit home for me, even though we had discussed it prior, is that if you really would have seen the look on Dwight's face when she came up with it, because we investigate a little bit differently than a lot of the other teams. We don't do a lot of research prior to going to the location. What we try to do, and so who's ever the person who owns the location or is in charge of the location, when we go on these private investigations, we tell them, we say, look, point out maybe some places where you think or have heard that it garnishes evidence, but don't tell us the story behind it, and don't really go over the top to try to explain us like some of the things that people have encountered. The reason why we do that is ultimately we're not influenced then and looking out for something. You know, sometimes people put ideas in your mind and then you think you're getting things just because, you know, you're more ultra sensitive to it because, you know, you've heard a corroborating story about an area that you're in. And then what we do is after the investigation, we go back and we talk to the people to let them know what our findings were. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, I will say is that we corroborate a lot of the things that people that have come before us that have investigated there. And in this particular case with the Fowler Theater, Dwight basically was blown away that Lane even knew that and was not something that he shared when we went there. We gave him our normal, you know, overview and said, look, just point out, you know, certain areas where, you know, you believe to have encounters or have other people have had encounters. And so as we were reviewing it, that's what made him even more shocked about the fact that she would come up with this. And Lainey and I truly believe that after, you know, her brush with death, basically, mm-hmm. is that she became sensitive. She became, you know, she touched that ethereal plane and became a little bit more sensitive about surroundings and encounters with whatever it is, the parallel universe or the energies that are around us that we can't see at a different, you know, level. But I think she tapped into it. So I, you know, we really feel that that's a really, really interesting story, in addition to evidence that we capture.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Don and Lainey of Spectra Waves on the haunted McPike Mansion. A big thank you to them for joining us and sharing their experiences on today's program. Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.